You're about to enter a strange world. A world where Reading score goals at home. A world where Reading come from behind to win games. And a world where Reading are one of the last eight teams in the greatest cup competition in the world. This is the FA Cup, and this is the Tarlhurst End Podcast. No, this isn't the Twilight Zone. We are, in fact, once again into the last day of the FA Cup and just one win away from another day at Wembley. We'll look back on an excellent 3-1 win over West Brom and try to figure out just why we can't do this every week. Pub chat centres around who we'd build our next Reading teams around, while in the mailbag we'll debate whether Reading should be doing more to bring through local talent. All that plus previews of this week's Championship action on the Tarlhurst End Podcast, episode number 86. Hello and welcome to the show. My name's Dan Wimbush, editor of tarlhurstend.com. Thank you very, very much for hitting that download button once again. Very, very much appreciated, and a quick thank you as well once again to everyone who has joined in the crowdfunding campaign. Can't thank you enough. It has very much helped improve the show, at least I like to think so. I like to think we're up from unprofessional joke of a podcast to semi-professional joke of a podcast, and that is all down to your kindness. Well, without further ado, let's introduce this week's guest. Once again, stepping off the bench, making a heroic appearance, is one Steve Curtis, otherwise known as Raw Hoop. Steve, hello, welcome back.
Hello, thanks for having me back.
Like Adam Lafondre, you're slowly working your way into that starting lineup on a regular basis.
Yeah, I'm not won't score any goals this way, though.
Well, come on, gotta have that confidence. And we've got the experienced man back in the chair. He's been away for a few weeks, kept him fresh, you know. His legs, he's had a lot of podcasts behind him, need to keep him special. Mr. Alan West. Westy, hello.
Yeah, I'm becoming a bit of a veteran, aren't I? I've sort of been pushed out to see the odd game here and there. It's a bit like the FA Cup team we've got out today, haven't it? It's sort of rested a few.
Yeah, well, as I said, you've done a lot of podcasts now. You've probably done, what, best part of 200?
Yeah, best part of 200.
So, you know, you never know how many podcasts you've got left in. You've got to keep you fresh.
Not many.
I think I'm getting there. We're at, what, 86 now? So, plus a few dozen podcast extras as well. So I think I've clocked up well over 100 as well.
You made a few surprise appearances in the early days as well, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Popped into the old Rules Post, that old studio with a Hoover. fond memories with Johnny Fordham.
Happy days.
Who's now covering rugby, England rugby.
We don't know a lot about that either, so...
Ooh. Hey, shots fired. It's all right, he doesn't listen to this. He's moaned a couple of times because we haven't invited him on, but every time I do invite him on, he's nowhere to be seen.
He's a busy man.
Right, let's move on to more enjoyable things and a rare comprehensive Reading win to talk about. 3-1 over West Brom, we'll cover that in the recap.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So, Reading through to the sixth round of the FA Cup for the fourth time since 2010. It's a record that I couldn't see coming a couple of seasons ago, but this seems to be the only thing we're interested in these days, gents. Forget the league, it's all about the cup, the magic of the cup.
It's any time we score any goals as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Three goals at home, and four off.
We are the FA Cup's top goal scorers this season, apparently. Yeah.
Vidra is the top goal scorer in the competition, isn't he?
Yeah.
Still, is he? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure, he still is.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm. Remarkable. What is it down to? How is it that we go from drawing 0-0 in successive weeks against Championship sides, including one of which is mid-table side at best in Wolves, to going and putting three past a Premier League team?
No idea. I'd love to sit here and tell you the magic formula, but it just seems at the moment, well, especially over the last, like say, four or five seasons, that Reading seem to be excellent in the Cup and then in the league, average at best.
It's got to be a mentality issue. It's got to be. There's got to be something about the idea of you're either knocked out now or you go through it to the next round. There's got to be something to do with the players thinking make or break type thing. Whereas in the league, there's always, oh, we've got next week. Oh, we've got next week.
And the other thing is because they've had a taste of the sort of higher rounds of the FA Cup quarterfinals, semi-finals recently, maybe they want a bit more of that. I mean, that quarterfinal atmosphere against Bradford, I thought was probably the best we've had at the stadium for years. And then obviously semi-final at Wembley. The players, obviously, they're mid-table when they sort of know it. But in the FA Cup, they want to taste that Wembley feeling again.
Yeah, I think Michael Hector's said as much. He said that we enjoy that pressure. Like you said, Steve, of knowing that it's do or die, that we've got to win this game. And Brian McDermott said after the game, he said, we're really pleased. I thought we deserved to win the game. We went 1-0 behind against a Premier League side. And especially a side like West Brom, that could have been a real problem for us. But we scored quite soon after to make it 1-1. And the second goal was important, obviously. Then the last goal gave us a chance to relax a little bit. with a minute to go. If you don't show grit and determination and good mental aptitude, then you're going to have a problem in any game of football. We showed all those qualities and some quality. We showed all of those qualities and some quality as well. Our delivery from set piece was excellent. Ollie Norwood put two great balls into the box, and if you put balls into the right areas, we've got guys who will score goals. There are a lot of players that were involved or were substitutes today. It's everyone together. It really is. That's what competitions for places is about, and I feel we've got real competition now. Everyone is chomping at the bit to play.
And so they should be.
Yeah. Can't argue. I mean, one thing I would say is, somewhat cynically, is the FA Cup is a bit of a shop window for certain players. I mean, we talk about those loanees and a few of the players we've recruited, with Reading being like a stepping stone club. You wonder whether the FA Cup for them is like, oh, if I perform well here, then I might get a move. You know, you talk about how Robson Kanu, for example, playing well in the FA Cup, although he's played well in all competitions recently, it might be a chance for him.
Michael Hector as well always seems to really turn it on when the FA Cup cameras are there.
And not only that, I mean, if you look at the starting lineup, I think we had, was it five sort of local lads or ones that have come through the youth system? And he's been talking about identity, hasn't he, for the last couple of weeks? And he's clearly, what he's trying to do is move people into the team that have got a Reading base to them. And obviously you've got players like McShane and Williams, who I know wasn't there this week, but they give you all they've got anyway. And the lone players, I mean, I think he sees them as impact players, and I think Ola John has been a prime example of that, because I'm not sure about you guys, but I thought, why isn't he starting this week? He seems to be on the bench every week. He does make an impact from the bench, but he's just a good player. He's one of these players, a bit like Glenn Litt, where you can give him the ball and you can trust him on it. And I'm surprised he hasn't started recently, I must admit.
Yeah, and we get this every week on the Twitter feed, in fact, and we've got a question about it from Andrew Ward. He says, what has Ola John got to do to start a game? Again, superb on Saturday. Exciting winger who has that creative spark. I think the obvious answer here is fitness. And that is what Brian McDermott said whenever he's been questioned by Tim Deller or Charles Watts about it. He said he's not fit enough to start 90 minutes. I've seen him start one game, Westy. It was against Brentford. And to be colloquial, he was blowing.
Yeah.
He was blowing after about 35 minutes and he did his hamstring in very shortly afterwards. So there's obviously something there that's stopping him from getting to that peak fitness.
Yeah, I understand that's what you've been saying is the problem, but you'd have thought in February, when you've been here all season, you should be fit enough to start matches. And if you're not,
I know, agree.
Why not? Yeah.
Well, that's just it, but the very fact is that he's not. I mean, we are in end of February and he's obviously not at that point. Although I've got a sneaking suspicion we might well see him from the start tonight. Tomorrow night against Rotherham. Because I think if you're going to give him a chance against anyone, that's the sort of game you want to do it.
And it's the only way to get him fit then. If he gets 70, 80 minutes under his belt over a couple of weeks, you'd have thought he'd been at match speed.
Yeah.
But he certainly is an impact player. I mean, I thought he was excellent when he came on. He changed the game completely.
Yeah, he won the two free kicks for the goals. Obviously some great deliveries from Ollie Norwood as well. A couple of other players given chances, and this one came like a real bolt out of the blue. Simon Cox starting a game. I think Stevie said the first time since August.
Yes. Yeah, that did come out of the blue, considering he didn't even really play for Bristol City either. And he didn't score, did he? I don't think he scored for Bristol City. So, I mean, that might be a bit of the identity thing he's going for, is bringing a Reading lad through. He works hard. I was only listening on the radio. I wasn't there. Stupid Steve. But Della was saying he was Reading's best player in the first half.
Ooh, I think that's being a bit generous.
I don't know what Della was watching. Yeah. I thought Cox was awful in the first half.
I wouldn't go as far as to say awful. I thought he worked hard. You could see the good movements, but it just seemed to break down at that last pass.
Well, it wasn't so much that. I thought when he had the ball, he either made the wrong decision or he lost it. He made good runs and he always tries. You can't knock him for that. But I thought it was weird, actually. And Rackle's in the team as well on the left-hand side.
Yeah, making his full debut.
He was so right-footed, it was ridiculous at times, and I thought, well, if you're going to play him in his proper position when you've got three wingers sat on the bench. I didn't understand that.
He gave everything he had. He ran around a lot, hustled, did try and hold the ball up quite well, but again, just lacked that little bit of quality, little bit of sharpness in the final third. Also thought he was a little bit weak.
I thought he was weak as well.
Got knocked off the ball two or three times.
He did, and he's another one. He looks like he's going to give you all he's got, but a bit like Mackie, he tries hard, but it's just a little bit of quality lacking.
There is something there, though, that we've already seen in these two, three games. He's not going to be a complete dud, I don't think.
I'd have liked to have seen him up front.
Yeah.
Played up front in his proper position, because he was on the left, and he was so right-footed, it was ridiculous, that he would never go down the left-hand side in a million years. And like you say, he did look a bit weak. Now, again, he'll learn this, hopefully, but I thought if you're going to play him, put him up front, especially when you've got three wingers sat on the bench.
Yeah, maybe Brian McDermott didn't think he had the fitness. Again, he's someone that
Brian has said in recent weeks, it's still really his pre-season. He's just getting up to speed. So maybe he didn't think he could run around and lead that line for 90 minutes.
It's a fair point, but if you have to play on the wing in the system we've got at the moment, you have to track back as well and help the defender. So I'd have thought you'd probably do less running up front to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Well, at least the benefit of having Michael Hector in the team does allow a little bit more freedom for those wingers. Will did some excellent tactical analysis that you can go and read over on the Tylehurst end, and he showed how he just sort of helps release the midfielders a little bit more and give them freedom to push on.
I thought Hector was excellent.
Brilliant.
I thought it was one of the best games he's had. I think that position, he looks better in that position than he does at centre-back, just in front of the defenders there. I thought he held the ball well, he directed the play, and he scored a goal, and I thought it was probably one of the best games Hector's had for a long time.
What about you, Steve? Where do you think his best position lies in the future?
Yeah, I reckon defensive midfield, because he's a very languid player. He always, you know, he never looks like he's fully focused type thing. He always looks like there's a chance he might do something a bit daft. So if he's got two defenders, actual defenders behind him, just in case he does, it kind of gives him more freedom to go off and do his thing. And I think when he's in that position for the past couple of games, he has looked like a real weldy.
Not only that, it adds height to our team. You know, we've got three players in that could possibly win headers, yeah. And two of them scored this week. And Cooper's always a danger from set pieces. And I think what we lacked at the start of the season was sort of big, strong aerial threats. And with them three in the team, you've got it.
Yeah, McShane also nearly scoring with his foot as well. That was one the best thing Cox did, that could lay off for McShane. He just struck it really well. He almost struck it too well. Yep. It's just spun a little bit away from goal. The man who did create McShane's goal and Hector's goal was Ollie Norwood. Two fantastic set pieces, as Brian said in his post-match comments. Now, I came out of the ground actually thinking that Ollie Norwood hadn't played brilliantly. But it was only after sort of talking to other people that had been to the game, re-watching the highlights, and really sort of taking the fact that, yeah, he put across these two excellent balls for the goal, that you sort of thought, yeah, actually, you know, fair play. Thinking about it, he has had a really good game. Do we maybe expect a little too much from Ollie Norwood in open play at the moment?
Maybe. He's obviously is the playmaker to a certain extent. And with Hector in there, you've got two people that can pick a pass. And I think it makes a difference. Norwood, like I said, these two balls into the box are excellent. And if that's all you do and you create two goals, then I think you've pretty much done your job in a midfield three.
Are you worried at all, Steve, about the fact that we're not scoring goals from open play? I know Lucas Pearson got one right at the end of this game. But realistically, we're talking, what, the best part of 4-5 championship games? I struggle to think. I think it's Danny Williams at Derby. Might be the last goal we scored from open play. Cooper's against Sheffield Wednesday came from a corner. McCleary's at Ipswich was a penalty. And then we had, obviously, the first two goals on Saturday were both from corners as well. Are you worried about the chance we're creating in open play?
It's been a while. I guess it's hard not to be worried about open play goals, because then that kind of means you rely on set pieces, because otherwise you're not going to win. But obviously McDermott is focusing on the defence, and when he came in, the defence was a bit haphazard. And he's kind of settled on his back four now. You've got Gunter, McShane, Cooper, Obita, and then Alhabsi. And they're kind of all settling into their places. They kind of know what they're expected to do. And it's kind of, so long as you're defending well, you've always got a chance. And I guess he did say a couple of weeks ago, didn't he, I'll build from the defence and then work on attacking once I've got defence sorted. So I guess that's what he's doing. So we should give him time to sort that out.
I was going to say, I mean, I know everyone was eulogising about what a great win it was, and it was a good result, but I thought, sure, in the 90 minutes, apart from at the end where they've chucked the kitchen sink at it and we've scored on the break, at no stage did we look like we was going to break them down from open play, and that's been the theme for the last three or four matches. I mean, I think we've only scored one goal for months in matches, and that was the first time we scored three for a long time, other than the FA Cup games. But we never, ever looked like we was going to break them down by playing it round them or playing it through them. And that's been, like I say, that's been the theme for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, that is the slight problem with this formation, this 4-1-4-1 they're playing. It does look much more solid. And again, I really do encourage you to go and read Will's tactical analysis on this. It explains it much better than I can do. But, you know, you have that stability, you have that extra man, that screen, and you've got the bite in the midfield with Quinn, and you've got Norwood in there, who is a bit of a playmaker, but still a little bit more defensively minded. But it's just not a lot. And you're playing this lone guy up front. It was Cox and Vidra on Saturday. Both of them looking horrifically isolated. It was Kermican the week before as well. He couldn't do much either.
No, and that's why John's been so important coming off the bench, because he's the only player at the moment anyway that can create for himself or create a problem for a team, because he can take people on, and that always frightens defenders and it opens them up as well.
He ups the tempo as well, doesn't he? You think the midfield in general is very slow at the moment, and every time I go to a game I'm like, quick, come on, quick pass it. And it's always, nope, stop, take a touch, slow it down. And you're not really going to score like that unless you've got some, you know, like a Messi in your team who can just do something. And I guess, you know, that's why Ole John is so impactful, because he does do stuff on his own, and otherwise you haven't got any players that can do that.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I would say over the last few months, really, I've complained that Reading look like a ploddy team. Well, they don't seem to be able to scare anybody. I've said it for months, years actually, over the top. There's still no pace over the top, and it's only John that sort of brings a bit of flash of lightning to the place when he comes on.
What you would hope, though, is the fact they have been very solid defensively. It was a little bit of a sloppy goal they gave away for Darren Fletcher on Saturday, but generally,
in all honesty, I mean, that ball over the top that Fletcher sort of shinned to the goalkeeper, if that had gone in, we'd been talking about a different game, because that was a clear opportunity to score, and he really should have done.
Yeah, absolutely. But generally, the defence have been good, and that gives the rest of the team confidence. You've got that confidence in the people behind you. They've not had a lot of times this season. They've really not been sure of the people behind them. The partnerships have been changing. The goalkeeper's been changing. They're just slowly starting to build that confidence. And as you get that, you're not so afraid to take on a man. You're not so afraid to drive forward or to play that killer pass, because you know, okay, I might get it wrong, but the guys behind me have got my back. Rather, in recent weeks, it's like, oh God, I don't want to give it away. If I give this away, they're going to come at us and they're going to score.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like at certain times this season.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a good screen now. I mean, I think, again, Cooper, I've said that it'd probably be first choice when we had this. He would be first choice on your team sheet next year. And I said Cooper should end up being first choice. And I think he's played himself into that team really well. And I can't see anyone taking his place now, because not only is he young and improving, at the moment he looks the part, and I think he's been excellent at centre-back. And I guess does give you that threat aerially that we've talked about we've missed.
Big time. Absolutely. But
also, if you've got Hector sat in front of them and them three are going to sit there, what should happen, and what doesn't always happen at the moment, is Reading should be flooding that box of players when they've got it wide. And they're still a little bit slow to join up with the strikers. And as soon as they get that sorted out, because I think Norwood naturally tries to sit, you know what I mean? And when someone else is sitting, I think he's struggling with getting forward, because he did try and play him a bit higher this week, didn't he?
Yeah.
They've tried it before.
And he doesn't really play killer through balls. He's not a Simon Osborne type that's going to play that sort of killer ball through to an on-rushing striker. Maybe that's because Reading haven't had a guy with pace up front for a while. Maybe we'll see that when Rackles plays, and if maybe Dom Samuel comes back, something along those lines. Just a quick word as well before we move on. Credit to Hal Robson-Kanu again. Thought he put in a very good shift. He loves the FA Cup.
I thought he was absolutely brilliant on the day. And it's very rare that I'd ever give Hal Robson-Kanu any praise. Whether it's because he's got a contract that's running out, maybe. But I think over the last 3 or 4 weeks especially, I think he's been a great ball carrier. He's
best Reading player in 2016 for me.
I think he's been amazing.
I wouldn't go quite as far as amazing.
Or by his standards, he's been absolutely amazing.
Well, yeah, that's setting the bar very low for the two-time Tyler Sten Podcast Award underachiever winner. In fact, he's got the award named after him.
I think he might get a most improved this year.
He very well might. He might struggle, though, if he does leave in the summer. We'll come on to a brief bit of news bites about where he's linked with going. But yeah, credit to Hal. But yeah, we're into the hat for the next round. And the draw, guys, absolutely fantastic to us as well. Mm. All you can ask for at this stage is a home tie. But to get a home tie against Crystal Palace, who, when you look at the rest of the teams in the draw, along with Watford, probably one of the two sides you would have snapped your hand off to get, meeting with Alan Pardew, we do seem to have a pretty decent record against in recent years. Can't ask for much more than that.
I think it's an amazing draw for us. When you come out first as well, you think, oh, thank God we're at home. And then when they pulled Palace, you think that is a good opportunity to get into the next round. I'm not saying they will, but it's a good opportunity.
Mm. It's a winnable tie, isn't it? Yeah. You think West Brom, that was a winnable tie, as it turned out. But Crystal Palace are also a winnable tie, and they do obviously have their threats. Most obviously Bolasie and Zaha on the wings, but you can beat them. You know, you can set up the same way you set up against West Brom, and you can have a right go at them, and they are a bit fragile at the back, I think, recently. So
yeah, they've not been in fantastic form in the Premier League, haven't they? They've not won in 9 before they go and won at Spurs in the last round.
They were super lucky. Did you see the highlights? Tottenham were all over them. How they didn't score, God only knows.
But that can change teams from around par to be up for it. There was a bit of debate. I noticed Aidy Williams telling BBC Radio Baxter he thinks Pardew's going to get a good reception. What do you reckon?
I think he'll get the same reception he always gets, and I hope he does, because it sort of livens the crowd up, which would be lovely.
You need a good pantomime villain, don't you?
We do, yeah.
You need to stagger the booze around the stadium, keep it going all game.
The best thing is, everyone knows it upsets Pardew, so it's best that we do it, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there was one unfortunate side to the game, which we'll come on to in news bites, right in a coin throw an incident that I'm sure you've all heard about by now, so we'll come on to that very shortly. But if you do fancy a punt on Reading to win the FA Cup, you can get best price odds of 40-1. I'm Reading to win the cup.
Do you know what?
Gamble away.
My friend, he listens to the podcast and he's a Leeds fan. And he said he's still laughing about you and Johnny telling how much you're going to lump money on Reading win the league after the first four or five matches.
I'm funding those bookmakers' Christmas parties next year.
He said that the mood's certainly changing the podcast over the course of the season.
Yeah. Well, that serves me right for ever daring to bet positively on Reading. So that is why, folks, we say gamble away.
Yeah.
We do have that serious coin incident to talk about in News Bites, as well as a little bit more positive news on the contract front. So we'll come on to all of that in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So for the second time in as many years, you've had some unsavoury scenes at a cup tie at the Badesky Stadium. Unfortunately, two incidents of note. One, some racially aggravated abuse directed towards a steward, and another incident, much more high profile, that's caught the attention of the national media, a coin being thrown from the West Brom fans at Chris Brunt, their own player, after he came over to the away end to hand a little girl his shirt at the end of the game. I don't think much needs to be said about this, gents. I think we all agree it's just absolutely bang not on, and not what both incidents, nothing you ever want to see at a football game.
No, it harps on to the 80s when it used to happen quite a lot. But again, if they could have chucked that hit him in the eye, they'd have blinded him, his football career would have been over. It's a stupid thing to do. Why do it to any player, let alone your own players? And I think it also happened at the Man City-Chelsea game later on in the week. So yeah, it's, the problem is when these things get publicised, people sort of stupidly do them. But yeah, it's a stupid thing to do. Obviously, they're upset their team's got beat by Championship sides. We all would be, but it doesn't mean we go chucking money at our own players.
Thames Valley Police have confirmed they made one arrest in connection with the incident, and they're appealing for anyone with more information to come forward. There is a story on the Tarlhurst End if you need information on who to contact. But yeah, credit to both clubs, both managers as well, slamming the incident. It's clearly not something anyone's condoning or encouraging, so very much hope that whoever does it is gets justice.
Gets
appropriate justice handed out, because as I said, we don't want to see it anywhere near the football club. Just the same as the ugly incidents we saw in the Bradford game last season. So let's move on from that one as quick as possible. I said some much more positive news from Reading's point of view, and that is that their right back Chris Gunter has signed a new 2-year contract. And this one for me, guys, came a little bit as a surprise, because I didn't think that Reading were going to stump up the money needed to keep him.
I think they would have been stupid not to keep him at the club at the age he is and the experience he's got. And again, I wouldn't say he was one of the best players I've ever seen at right back, but he certainly he's got high energy. And you do struggle to get a better right back in the Championship, I think, defensive wise anyway.
It's the right decision for the club, isn't it? You wouldn't find a player better than Gunter for the, you know, the kind of budget we're on. And he said that he wants to stay. And I think as soon as a player says that, you should really kind of at least give them the opportunity. And I think Charles said on the podcast extra that he's taken less money, or he believes it's taken less money. And so it's just a great deal for everyone involved.
Yeah, I mean,
really.
he showed a lot of loyalty to the club, and that's very rare nowadays. So if a player says they want to stay, and at the age he is with the ability he's got, I'd say you'd be hard pressed to pay for another right back that's as good as him at this level.
And that's just it. He's in his mid-20s. He's at an age where he could legitimately go out on the free market and probably pick up a nice juicy signing on bonus. Good wage. And I think it's a really positive sign for Reading that they've been able to get this deal done, because while Charles has said he's taking a pay cut, he's still going to be wanting a decent amount of money. And for Reading to be able to say, yeah, we'll give you that contract for 2 years, does sort of hint that there is a little bit of money around this summer. How much, we don't know, but it would have been quite easy for them to say, we'll let you walk away and we'll get a cheap left right back in from League One.
Yeah, they could have done that, but like I said, if you're going to build a squad that's going to get you in the Premier League, then players like Gunter you're going to need to keep around, even if it's a reserve.
Yeah, and so he will be at the Medeski hopefully until the summer of 2018. No news as yet, again discussed with Charles on the podcast section, no news on Hal Robson-Kanu or Anton Ferdinand's contracts. But as far as Hal Robson-Kanu goes, rumour in the Daily Mirror over the weekend that Swansea are interested. Apparently they're on red alert to sign him. I'm not sure, we had it on our news article. I'm not sure if a club's ever been on yellow alert for a player.
No.
But apparently they're interested in getting him on a free transfer because they made a bid in the summer along with Aston Villa. And the man linked to replace him in the Medeski Stadium, again from the Mirror, one Adam Lafondra.
Really?
Would you be interested in an Alfie return? It's a shake of the head from Westie over there.
No, I didn't. I know he used to score a lot of goals, but I wasn't a big fan of his when he was here. I thought largely you carry him unless he puts the ball in the net, which he's not doing quite as readily as he was when he was here the first time.
Just 3 goals for Wolves in the league this season, Steve. Is it a punt you want Reading to take?
Well, I don't know, because he obviously at Reading he scored goals, and so you should never really say no to a player that scores goals because he can help out. But he hasn't really scored goals since he left Reading, which what makes you wonder if he's lost that knack of scoring goals.
He did have a good purple patch at Bolton, though. The second half of last season when he went up there, he did quite well. But yeah, this season it's not worked for him at Wolves.
No, and I don't know if that's, you know, it shouldn't really bring back a player that's done so well in the past. You kind of risk ruining that little cult hero status he's got from a certain section of fans.
So Curran's still playing, we could maybe get him back as well.
Look, I think as a club and the two promotion sides that we've had here have shown it, you need a good set of 3 or 4 strikers. And I think Lafondra, as he showed the last time he was here, complements that well. Now, it all depends what sort of role Lafondra's willing to take. Is he going to be happy only starting, say, half the games, a third of the games, and spending the rest of the season on the bench? If he is, in exchange for, you know, a decent contract and coming somewhere where he's comfortable, sign him up. But if he's coming here thinking, I want to play 40 games a season, then I think I'm with you, both of you. I wouldn't have him back. But you can't deny his skill set. He scored goals at every level he's been at. And I fail to believe that he's not even 30 yet, that he's completely lost that touch. I think if he did come here and was used in the right way, we'd see goals out of him again.
Maybe, but he's another player that I've said earlier. I don't think he scares anybody. If I was a centre-back, I wouldn't mind marking Lafondra.
Yeah, but you say that, but he gets the goals.
Yeah, he got the goals.
Yeah.
Yeah, got them.
Well, he's basically had one bad season out of the last, what, 5 or 6?
Well, you can sign him if you want him, Wim, but I'm just saying I don't.
I'll just look down the back of my sofa and find that money. Well, the financial side of that is the big concern. Reading selling him to Cardiff for a fee anywhere up to £3.5 million. That might be one of the things that lets Reading actually sign him back, because I don't know how the deal was structured, but usually the way these things work are instalments, sell-ons, add-ons. And if it's Cardiff selling him straight back to Reading, they might just say, well, just write off. We'll just write off the money that we owe you for the original deal and send him back. So might work out in their favour, but as with anything, this is paper talk. This could just be linking 2 and 2 together. Yeah. I know Brian and Alfie were both speaking fondly of each other in the run-up to the Wolves game the other week. So, and it's the same with Robson Kanu as well. It's an obvious link. Welsh team, Wales international,
yeah,
free transfer.
I think, if I remember rightly, last time his contract ran out, there was these rumours that he was either going to go to Cardiff or Swansea. Yeah. I'm pretty sure his brother, his agent, concocts these stories, so Reading sort of get the checkbook out a bit quicker.
What was that about Cox?
And he certainly hasn't done himself any harm, Hal Robson-Kahn, over the last couple of weeks. And to be fair to him, at the age he is, again, I think anyone takes him on a free transfer, it's a good investment for him.
Again, I said this last year, if he keeps scoring the goals to get us to Wembley, I've got no problem with the lad, and I've turned the page on him a bit. I'm very impressed with him. Actually, I wouldn't even say turn the page, because the whole reason we kept slagging him off for years on this show and on the website is because we knew he had this sort of potential, and yeah, he just wasn't showing it. And
what,
now he's showing it.
What we said, all the attributes to be, yep, a good footballer.
Yep, there we go. See, you heard it here first. That's why he wins the Underachiever Award.
That's it.
And not the Worst Player Award, because he's got that potential, he's not showing it. Anyway, you can go back and listen to the previous 85 episodes if you want to hear much more of our thoughts on Hal Robson-Kanu. In the meantime, we're going to move on to Pub Chat.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
Today's Pub Chat, 2 weeks in the making. I promised this one in the mailbag a couple of shows ago. It's from Sam Richards, and he asked, what 5 players from the current squad, including loans, would you keep here for next season? So which of the 5, if you had a chance of anybody, would you build your team around? You can pick any of them. So Steve, I'm going to ask you first. Who are your 5?
I went for a bit of a romantic academy-focused 5, this one. I went for, so Norwood, because I think he's true quality. I think he could play in the Prem if he had the right players around him. And then Cooper, Obita, Samuel and Tishbola, just because I think they are good enough to make an impact. They came through the academy, they kind of would get on board McDermott's identity and teamwork and all that kind of thing. And I think that they've obviously all got potential because they're all young enough to grow and improve. So there you go, that's my spine.
Like it. Westy?
Yeah, again, similar. I'll pick Cooper because I think at the age he is, I've already said, the ability he's got, I think he'd be a top-level centre-back at some stage in his career. McShane, just because I think in any side you need a natural leader. And I think in McShane they've got that. And again, it helped Cooper progress through his career. Williams, I've always said I love Williams. For all his faults, I think that when he plays, he does try and drive the midfield. And he will sort of grab games by the scruff of the neck. Dishbowler, I think he's shown more than enough this year. I know he's been injured for a lot of it. But when he's played, he's looked solid. He already looks like a top-level championship footballer. And again, the age he is, there's plenty of improvement in him. And the other one is a bit left field, is John, because I think in him you've got a natural match winner and a threat. And I think if in any team, you need them sort of players.
Yeah, I was very tempted to pick Ola John in my lineup. Mine was quite similar to both of yours, really. I had Jake Cooper, had Paul McShane, had, Tisbola McShane and Jake Cooper. Matty Vidra, yeah, he's a player that's got supreme quality. He's done it in this division before. I know he's not had a great season, but the quality's there. We've seen it in the FA Cup. We know what he can do. And I just think if he'd stayed fit and he'd had a regular partner, it could have been so much different. And I'd love to keep him here, but it's not going to happen, is it?
No, I can't see it happening. Unfortunately, I think if we look at next year moving forward, we're going to be struggling up front again. And when these loan players go, I'm seriously concerned we ain't going to have a very good side left.
Well, no, I mean, the other one I've picked is Gareth McCleary, someone who will be here next season.
Yeah, he's another good player. I mean, he's a potential match winner on his day, but unfortunately his days are sort of few and far between nowadays.
He just picks up niggling injuries, and it's another thing that maybe should have gone in news bites, but there is a one-off Copper Centenary competition this summer again, so he's going to be away with Jamaica again more than likely, and that's what did him in last summer.
Yeah.
He played in two tournaments for Jamaica, kept picking up niggly hamstring injuries, and Steve Clark was pretty furious that he came back and had been playing through these hamstring problems. So again, he's not going to have a full summer off. He's just a bit brittle.
Yeah, and I don't know what age he is now. Is he 28? Coming up for 29?
Getting into his late 20s, yeah.
So I'm saying, and for a player that plays on the wing that is as a quick player, they will, as time goes by, start picking up these niggly injuries, and that's the concern with McCleary.
When I wanted to pick you up on for Ola John, and this surprised me when I read it the other day, how old do you think Ola John is?
How old
yeah.
do you think he is? I've got no idea.
How old do you just think he is?
Didn't his brother play for Fulham?
Yeah, Stern.
Was it Stern or?
Oh, sorry, Collins. John.
Collins.
Not Stern. Stern John. That was the one that played for Birmingham.
And he played in the Premier League some time back, I think. Yeah. Off the top of my mind. So he's got to be 30 as well, I thought.
Steve?
No, I know how old.
Oh, you know how old this is. This stunned me. Ola John is 23.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was like you. I thought this guy.
Well, his brother's got to be about 45, hasn't he?
I thought, you know, journeyman, he's already ended up at Reading. He must be, like Drenta, getting on a bit. No, 23 years old. He turns 24 in May.
Well, again, there's a player that you could get another 10 years out of, potentially.
Absolutely. You know, he's already got one cap for the Netherlands. Hopefully, he won't be a Drenta and he'll buckle down and change that attitude. He certainly seems to be a bit more... the thing I liked from him when he came on is he was getting back defensively. He wasn't just hanging up far at the pitch. He was getting back into the box. Okay, he looked a little bit clumsy at times, a few scary moments, but he was prepared to muck in. So if he does get that fitness, as we said earlier, he can be a real threat. Did any other names come into your thinking for the team?
Not really. I think you've got in a Beater and Gunter, you've got steady championship left and right back. So I think, yeah, great. They're good players at this level. So I wouldn't build a team around them necessarily, but I'm certainly happy that they're going to be in our team. And then the others, I mean, you're looking at Kermigan.
No, Hal Robson-Kanu?
Again, there's another one. The reason I didn't pick him is because, one, I've been slating him for the last 10 years, and two, I don't think he'd be here anyway. So,
well, no, but this is a carte blanche.
Yeah, I know it was. But, I think there's better players than Hal Robson-Kanu.
No Michael Hector either?
No, I think... again, good player, but I think Tishbola is more of a future at the club, whereas Hector's obviously, we know he's already gone.
I think Hector's a bit too inconsistent to build your side around as well. Obviously, he can be really, really good. We've seen that in the past couple of games. We saw that last season, but we've also seen the bad Hector. And if you're going to start building a team full of, you know, a spine, you don't want that spine to be inconsistent and have wobbly days and dodgy periods. You want them to be kind of consistent six all the way through.
I mean, the reason I did pick him is because, one, I think Cooper's a better centre back than him anyway, and two, I think Tishbola will be a better central midfielder than him at some point, so if not now.
I noticed that Brian McDermott was backing him to make an impact at Chelsea next season.
He won't make an impact at Chelsea.
Didn't he also back Gilfie to play at Real Madrid though?
He could have done it.
I think
Gilfie's ceiling, I think he could have. he could have done a squad role at Real Madrid. I think he was such a talented player. It's just, again, maybe, I don't know whether it was that spell at Spurs or...
I think with Sigurdsson, I said it when he was here, the thing with Sigurdsson, you have to play to Sigurdsson. You can't, he won't fit into a normal position. He won't play centre midfield. He's not a great winger. But when he played just behind the striker, he was fantastic. And whether you would get the opportunity at clubs like Real Madrid to play in that position, it is very unlikely.
No, we'll see. There's still time.
Still time.
He's still youngish. Never know. Could make that a late career move. Anyway.
Kind of Swansea to Real Madrid. That's happened before.
Well, we also had a very similar pub chat suggestion from Rob Langham from the Two Unfortunates, who was on this show just a couple of weeks ago. He suggested picking your favourite sort of Reading five-a-side team. Now, I know that's one we've done here on the past.
Yeah.
But we might well do it again in a few weeks' time. So we will keep that one back for another week. Also, just to tease as well, we'll have an interview with one Ibrahima Sonko.
Oh.
Coming up in a few weeks' time. Ollie, our assistant editor, has recorded that and spoken to Sonks. We're going to hold that back for the next international break. So to give you a show when we're not here.
Take one little taster, though, for that five-a-side team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the players that I've picked for the spine for the five would be the team I've picked for five-a-side. It's a different game, five-a-side.
Yeah. I think Rob was saying more in terms of ever. But I suppose we could do this season team as well.
Okay,
ever.
I pick little players. Technical little players.
There you go. Is manager Westy coming out? Getting tactics board out.
Yeah, that's it.
Anyway, right, let's move on then without further ado to this week's mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/the Tarlhurst End.
So a big thank you to everyone who's got in touch with us this week via at the Tarlhurst End on Twitter using the TTE podcast hashtag, to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. or to the Facebook page at facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. Lots of feedback, as you'd expect, on Saturday's game. We'll start with Royalty Points. He says, great win and performance on Saturday. Hector's also showing how much we've missed Tish Boller, key player against West Brom. Mark Sugar, the perfect game Saturday. Team performance was excellent from the first whistle. McDermott's substitutions had impact, and the atmosphere towards the end was one we've been crying out for months. Let's hope it can be maintained. Rob Malloy, lads are superb. Winnable game, but unlike West Brom, Palace offer a serious attacking threat, especially on the break. And more thoughts on Palace as well. Rusty Catflap says, I bloody hate Palace, horrible noisy fans and horrible ground. I do realise it's at home. So there you go, Rusty, get it all out. Let the anger flow. That's what we're here for. Daniel Harrington says, is Crystal Palace a winnable game for you? If so, why? Sam Lomax says, playing so well at home, more winnable. Que sera, sera. Ryan Davis, Palace, probably about the best we could hope for, to be honest. And I'll come on to Chris Hartley's in a minute. So, Palace, we've touched on it. Winnable game. Any thoughts else from that little selection?
No, I think we spoke about the fact that it probably was the best draw we could have hoped for. It's either that or Watford. And I think Watford have been a bit better than Palace over the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, Palace not exactly pulling up trees in the Premier League this year. So, winnable home match.
Do worry that they might come into form, though. I think Adebayor is obviously getting back to fitness. Their main issue has been scoring goals, and Bolasie's just come back from injury. So, especially Bolasie against Gunter, as much as I like Gunter, I don't think anyone can really stop Bolasie if he's on his day. So it's a bit of a worry. Especially beating Spurs might give them a bit of a kick, and then they might go on the run of two or three wins, and the next thing you know, it's a really difficult game.
Well, there's no doubting that Palace have got match winners, but I think if you look at that draw, they've all got match winners. So
you don't get to the last eight without having some serious players. I mean, look at us with that player and the other one.
Rackles and Cox.
What about the atmosphere though, Westy?
It took a little while to get going as usual, but I think it's always the same. I think when the players start putting in good effort and good performances and start getting shots off on goal, the atmosphere picks up. It's not rocket science.
It was the same the other week. Penalty save from Al Habsi, got the crowd going. This week it was a substitution. Just bringing on a player who has a song, the Pia 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 Zon song, rocking the East Stand. And
I just think it's always been the same. I don't always be surprised about it, because I've never gone into Reading at a Medeski and the crowd have been super up for it before the kickoff. A bit like the West Brom fans are, and in general, I think away crowds are better at getting behind the team anyway. But yeah, it's always been the same at Bethesda Stadium. Can't see it changing. And if the players put in performances like that, then the fans get behind them.
Yeah, Reading fans need something on the pitch to get cheering about, don't they?
I'd also say on the flip side, because in the past, Reading fans have been quite down on their team too early. I don't think there's any of that at the moment either. I think they're given the opportunity to play themselves into games rather than getting on their back, which has happened.
There's just a general lack of enthusiasm all around. I think that's is good, as you say, because it means that they're not getting on the players' backs, but it's so hard to get going. I think the Wolves game was the worst and flattest I've been at the ground for a long time.
Also, there's been so many drab performances over the last three seasons. Like you said, no one really cares at the moment.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah. And lots of empty seats starting to appear as well, which isn't good. Hopefully, nice full crowd in for the Palace game. Chris Hartley says, is the side that finished the game on Saturday currently our strongest? Felt like the players understood their roles. With Hector playing that screening role, is that his position going forward? Well, we've already touched on where we see Hector playing. Is that our strongest team, though? Would you go and put that same side out against Rotherham if everyone's fit?
I don't see why not. Like I say, if you can beat West Brom, you should be able to beat Rotherham at home. But I think the only thing is it's a different game because Rotherham are not going to come and chuck the kitchen sink at us or at least try and break us down by putting players forward. They're going to sit and try and nick a win. So it'd be a different match altogether.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd start Vidra up top on his own. I just don't see him being that kind of striker. We saw it earlier the season where he played up front on his own and he never got fed at all. Even Troy Deeney sent out that tweet, didn't he? Oh, you never give him the ball to his feet, and he's not going to get the ball to his feet if he plays up top on his own.
No, I think he struggles with back to goal, to be fair. If you're going to hit him, he struggles with back to goal, where Kermigan is going to be a player that's going to have his back to goal a lot of the time.
And that's what I was going to say. I'd say Kermigan's definitely an upgrade on Cox. Coxie, I think if you give him a run, who knows what you might get out of him, but certainly on paper at the moment, and from more recent form, you got to go Kermigan as a stronger option, or Vidra. I think Cox is well down the pecking order. I think he was just he was last man standing, pretty much. Kermigan cup tied, Vidra injured. There wasn't really a lot of other options. So, hopefully we'll see a little bit more of him. I said he's got a little bit of an opening now to resurrect his Reading career, so we'll see how that one goes. Right, let's move on to another topic. Now, this one comes from Tom, and he's made this point on a couple of articles on the website, in the comments section and on Twitter over the past few weeks. He made some general comments on the game, a lot of which we've already covered already, so sorry I can't read everything out, Tom, but I did want to get this part of the email out. He said, I really do believe the club is letting local talent down in this town. The biggest key to success in today's game is opportunity. In a weekend littered with young, fresh talent featuring the FA Cup, it's disappointing to say I didn't think hometown players are given enough of a chance, let alone an opportunity. They are palmed off by our academy, under-21s or EDS coaches without batting an eyelid. Moving forward, the club officials should be looking at said talent. Players are let down by the arbitrary and quite profound nature of these actions. For a club that reportedly scouted over 90 to 100 games in the 2012-13 season, how many of those were in England, let alone Reading? My guess is probably none. This needs to change. We have talented players at the club, but nothing beats local passion, desire and fire to play for your club.
I agree. Yes, it's nice to have a few local players in your team, but I think at the end of the day, football's a results business, and I'm not convinced how many top quality players from Reading there are. And I think if you're thinking mentality and fire and passion for the club, if you join the club from elsewhere, at say 12, when you go through their academy for 5-6 years, you're kind of going to develop that passion anyway. So, I see the point, but I don't really buy it myself.
No, I don't agree with it either. And the reason I don't agree with it, because Reading, as a club, have done more to get their players from the academy into the first team than any other, from what I've seen, anyway, from my knowledge. I mean, even on Saturday, there was 5 players that come from that academy. Okay, Cox has gone and come back, Hector's going, but he's still come through the academy. So there was 5 players in that team that were academy players. And I think we've had goalkeepers in the bar. McCarthy, obviously, come through. And was
Jordan Beat has been there for years.
Beat has been there for years. And there's a lot of players that have come through that academy and end up playing for the first team. I think Reading probably do more than any other club, in probably not just the Championship, in all the leagues, to bring their players through. But the thing is, when you are high, you are playing at a high level, low Premier League level, high Championship level, you have to have bringing players that are capable of playing there. I mean, Taylor was given an opportunity more recently, wasn't good enough, been shipped out. Yeah. I think they give players the opportunity, but if you ain't going to take it because you ain't good enough, then you have to be shipped out. But Reading have done more. I mean, I know for a fact my boy plays in the under-9s academy. And the coaching is excellent with Reading. And the things they do with them players, I mean, my boy trained twice a week now for the academy. And he played against Aston Villa on Saturday. and they pick him up in a coach and they take him and they bring him back. And I think they do more than anybody I know to get young players playing for Reading.
Yeah, I would love to see some local lads from Reading, some fans of the club playing. And you do give them that little bit of extra leeway because they are fans. Yeah. You know, Jake Taylor probably didn't really get much stick because even though he was limited, he was a local lad. Yeah. So you gave him that time and opportunity.
I mean, Carajan as well, he's only just left the club. I mean, I think Reading have brought loads of players into that first team. Yeah. And it's made them a hell of a lot of money as well.
It's the odds game as well. I mean, we're talking about a town with, if you take the greater sort of Reading area, 250,000 people.
Yeah.
Now, the odds of you producing a footballer who's good enough to play in a top, you know, because they're running a top 30 side in the country. So those squads are 25 players each. So you're talking 750 players from the world into those squads. The chances of someone coming from the town of Reading to be one of those top 750 odd players, just do the maths. You know, it's asking a lot. Now, like you say, Wesley, I think the best that Reading can do is give those opportunities out. Now, Tom's obviously got a bit of experience. You know, he's done his research to his credit and he knows probably a bit more about it than I do. But from what I can tell and from what I've heard, they do give those opportunities out and the academy has been bringing through local players. But
it has, and you've got players like Dominic Samuel who people talk about, and he's had plenty of opportunity, I think, personally, to show that he should be a championship player. Now, whether he's took it a lot or he's been given bad luck because he's picked up injuries is another debate. But I know for a fact that Brian McDermott was down watching my son in the under-9s last Wednesday. He was down there watching all the players. Now, I wasn't there. But if that's not a manager who's looking at the youth and what's coming through, then I don't know many other managers that will come and watch the under-9s, let's put it that way.
Yeah, and the stories around Sir Alex Ferguson are similar, aren't they? That, you know, Beckham and Giggs and everyone says that he was there, he was watching it, he knew sort of every player at the club and what they were. And you just want them to have a chance. And by the sounds of it, they're giving those players a chance. Now, whether they're scouting as many games as they can, there's only so many games they can scout. And you're talking about going and scouting local games.
Well, I tell you, Reading have got a ton of scouts. I mean, my son was picked up from a scout in an under-8 game. So that just goes to show the level, the amount of scouts they've got looking around the local clubs. There are tons. So I think Tom's wrong on this point.
Yeah. And it, unfortunately as well, it's a numbers game. You can bring through as many players as you like, but there's only so many spots.
Yeah.
And it's not just that, you know, you go through age groups and, you know, you've got a natural sort of cut-off point because there's only so many people in those age groups. As soon as you get to the seniors, you're talking a 15-year age range.
Yeah.
So there's only so many slots to be taken up by very talented players. So it's just a numbers game.
There was 5 on Saturday. 5 academy players that have been in Reading's academy that played in that team. And there's not many sides you can say that. But look at the next round, there'll probably be none. Or one.
But, you know, they're not, those players that played aren't even, I don't know if they're from Reading or not, but all of them probably aren't from Reading.
I think Abita's from fairly nearby, isn't he?
Yeah, I think they're all from the local area. I mean, Cooper's been here since he was 8 years old, so he must live fairly locally.
Yeah, because you're not allowed to take, certainly under the old system anyway, you weren't allowed to take players. I think it's like maybe a 2-hour range.
I think players have come from, you know, Newbury and around the surrounding.
Pierce was Oxford.
Basingstoke, you know what I mean? Oxford. I mean, if you've come through, like you say, if you come through an academy at a young age, then you have got an association with a club.
Connor Wickham was in Reading for a bit. Charlie Austin as well came through the academy. They're players that obviously got away. I know Wickham moved because his parents moved.
But essentially, it's you've got to win games and you can't give players opportunity if they ain't good enough. So.
Indeed. Right, well, hopefully that answers your question, Tom. Again, if anyone else has got thoughts or experiences they'd like to share, please send them in at thetallestend@gmail.com on Twitter. A couple more bits of feedback before we move on. First from Sam Richards saying, forgetting DJ Mega Party, I wish we all could. That's my words, not his. But we're all thinking it. Forgetting DJ Mega Party, club doing good job before games and getting the atmosphere right now. I will give Mega Party some credit, actually, because he's been better in recent weeks. I've not heard him as much. Which therefore means he's better.
I think Sam Richards, I'll see him down in about 4 points in the Jazz Cafe before the game. I think he was getting the atmosphere started himself.
Now that I've dished out some minor praise for him, I will dish out a little bit of criticism. Did you stick around at half time in your seat, or did you go down to the Jazz?
I did stick around at half
time. Did you see the lad that had the shot in the half time game?
It was the most shameful shot I think I've seen.
He just kept hammering the poor lad. He's like, he should be ashamed. Hang your head in shame.
It was a shameful walk off, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And the barracking abuse that DJ
made. Not even got past the first. It's like, I think he was a little bit annoyed. It's like, my whole halftime shtick is gone because this lad can't get the first penalty.
All his scripts he had to rip up. Didn't
he? Oh dear. Anyway, I will give you credit, DJ Mega Party. You, as Dave Harris said, He is happy to take on feedback, and he does seem to be doing a better job. So keep up the good work. You're not quite in my favourite person's list, but you get in there. Come on.
Like I say, I like him.
You like him.
It's so bad, I love it.
There you go. You've got a friend. The first member of the DJ Mega Party fan club, Alan West. You get to...
Can be president.
A Mega Party badge. Mega Party bag.
A Mega Party bag. Good one.
A Mega Party bag. Oh, there you go. And finally... just a note from last week's show. We were talking about players who wound us up. Dave Stephens says, expected Dean Windass in players who wind you up. Conning the ref to get for the simple reason of conning to get Inga Marston sent off.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of players that have wound us up over the years.
Yeah. You go back and listen to last week's show. We mentioned a fair few of them. I think it was off the back of one Mr. Barton.
Yeah.
Giving us the wind up.
I don't know if you remember this player, but Fjortoff. He used to play for Swindon.
Yanaga.
Oh, God, I used to hate him.
Yeah, it wasn't.
He got my hero sent off one day at Swindon. Darius Dovcek, he got sent off, and that was a dive as well. And ever since then, I'll never forgive him.
Oh dear.
I think it was the same day that Keith Scott flipped us the bird as well.
I miss Swindon games.
That was before we signed for Reading, of course.
needing a Swindon game back in our lives. Right, that just about does it for the mailbag. It's time to move on to any other business and two more championship games to preview.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business.
So back to the bread and butter of the championship, as they say, starting with Rotherham at the Bradesky Stadium on Tuesday, and the return, Westie, of one Neil Warnock, plus his favourite goalkeeper, Paddy Kenny.
He follows him everywhere, doesn't he?
He does.
Everywhere.
I think this is the fourth club he's followed him to.
Yeah.
It's a bit creepy, really, isn't it?
The BBC were running a series of players that followed follow their managers everywhere.
Paddy and Neil.
It's the radio show waiting to happen. But, you know, in all seriousness, Rotherham are a team very much struggling. They are in the relegation places. They've been on a miserable run. They're winless in their last six. They've not won away in the league since October. The bookies have Reading odds on favourite for this. We're 10 to 13 best price. The draw's 11 to 4. And you can get 9 to 2 on Rotherham walking away with all 3 points. I know if... I had a cheeky 10. I know where I'd be putting it based on those odds and Reading's shonky home record as of late. But, Steve, you look at that team and they've got some injury worries as well with Lloyd Doyley and Danny Ward. They announced in their presser today. You look at it, though, and there's nothing to scare you, is there?
No, I don't know. I know, obviously, is that Lee Camp in goal?
It is,
I recognise.
Greg Halford.
Leon Best is he's all right.
Just coming back to fitness, he's barely played football all season.
I thought this team looks like a team from like 1998 or something, don't they? So many players in there that seem to be around for years that looks like a team sheet from 25 years ago.
Is that Matt Derbyshire? Weren't Reading linked with him at some point?
Yeah, Matt Derbyshire scored against us last season.
He's guaranteed to score again, isn't he?
So 1998 we were linked with him.
Yeah, we haven't beaten them this season. We went up there to the New York Stadium and that was kind of the beginning of the end, because that stopped that winning run, that 1-1 draw, and we never recovered.
And Lee Camp's got a nasty habit of having good games against Reading, from what I can remember.
Yeah, it's probably the most annoying 1-2 combo of goalkeepers from a Reading perspective there, of Paddy Kenny and Lee Camp.
And Greg Alford, nice to see him back.
Yes, yeah, he was stripped of the captaincy earlier this season. Rotherham on their third manager of the campaign now with Warnock. Neil Redfern was had just been appointed when we went up there and drew 1-1 earlier in the season, so he didn't last long.
And when's he going to retire, Neil Warnock? He seems to come back every other week.
He's 67 years old.
He comes back every other week, doesn't he? This is my last job. Yeah. And he's back again 3 weeks later.
He was at QPR as like director of football or something, wasn't he? And then stepped into the managerial role and then got sacked.
And that's it. He's got a win at the Bradesky Stadium this season with QPR. That, again, a shonky last-minute winner.
The thing is with Neil Warnock, he's clever enough to know that if he takes these jobs where they already look like they're down, it doesn't matter if they get relegated. He still looks like a hero either way.
He said it. I love being in the underdog role. He's going to have a really big task because they could be as much as 8 points adrift of the relegation zone. If they lose to Reading and the MK Dons win. So this is a big game for them. Realistically, though, as we said, looking at the team, looking at everything, it's got to be 3 points for Reading, hasn't it?
They should be destroying teams like this.
Should.
There's no excuse, but we know from Reading past that these are the sort of games that get beat.
Okay, then
terminals were over.
We'll come on to the prediction league in just a minute, but we'll preview the week's other game, and that is a trip to the Valley to take on Chatham. Some cheap tickets on offer for this one, so there should be a good travelling contingent going down to the Valley. Again, another team that are in awful form and in deep relegation trouble. their form. They've won just once in 15. Funnily enough, that lone win came against Rotherham, and that was away from home. The last home win came on the 7th of November. So again, 3 months without a win, nearly four.
Would you say they're lacking a bit of confidence?
I think so. The fans have been protesting the ownership. They've had a change in manager. And you look at that lineup, Westie, and I like to think of myself as a fairly educated Championship man, but good luck.
Yeah, never heard of them.
Solly, Fox, Lennon, Teixeira, Harriet, Poye, Lookman, Barr, Motta, Bergic.
Go on, read that one.
I can't even pronounce the name.
Gushanshad.
This is a prime example of young players not coming into the first squad.
Local lads. Yeah.
Hey, you never know.
Who knows, yeah.
I do think they'll probably have more to do with the links to Belgium, but you never know. Probably. I don't know Charles Jesus, so I'm not going to pass comment, but whatever way you look at it, this is not a team full of household names. This is a team very much devoid of confidence. And the very fact is that you can get nearly 3-1 on Charlton to win a home game.
Wow.
3-1. And the best price at the moment, 13-5 on Charlton to win this game, which for a home team in the Championship, that's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. Again, Charlton, I always got no pity for Charlton since the day their fans were protesting to get Alan Kirbishley the sack when they was 10th in the Premier League. Mm. I've always since then laughed every time I see them get beat because I think they thoroughly deserved it.
I think they've paid their dues, so they went all the way down to League One.
I'll never forget.
Like an elephant.
I take it you weren't happy that Bolton got saved today.
I didn't see that. Did they get saved?
They have a last minute takeover package has saved them from administration.
Always happens, doesn't it? Last minute.
Yeah, I joked earlier with our counterpart SB Nation blog from the Bolton side. I was like, why don't you just get Fabian De Freitas to swoop into court?
Yeah,
he'll get you out of jail in the last minute.
The thing is with these takeovers, they leave it to the last minute because that's when they get the best deal.
Absolutely. But anyway, yeah, Reading just better than evens to win this. 15-13 is the best price you can get. The draw is 5-2. Again, can you see anything but a Reading win in this game? Well,
no.
This is
Reading. Yes.
The important caveat when discussing Reading predictions.
On paper, no. In reality, maybe.
Yeah, you'd like both of these games to be games where you can finally break that open play goal-scoring duck. You know, you'd like to see someone score from open play against these two. Because they're not good enough to be able to stop us from scoring from open play, really. And so the only thing that would hold us back would be the team itself.
Yeah, and what you want is... I've said all season long, I don't think Reading are getting relegated at all. But just to tick off that box and just to really completely squash it, they get 6 points from these two games. They're on 43 points. And looking at the points total of the teams in the bottom three at the moment, around sort of 25, 26. Again, you're talking 15, 16 points. And that they're not going to catch that.
You can't see these teams going on runs to get out of trouble.
No.
Either, can you? It's not happened all season, so why would it happen now?
So if you can put that 100% sort of to bed with two wins in these games, and you can really focus on that FA Cup, you can really do all your planning in training, you can maybe rest that person who's a little bit dodgy for a league game and really go for that FA Cup, because our season's coming down to basically one game now, isn't it?
Then we can look at Europe after that.
Yeah, going on a European. So it was quite funny. Martin Samuel, I think, was writing in the, I think, Daily Mail. I apologise, Martin, if I've got your paper wrong. He was writing today about the fact that the FA want to have maybe give the FA Cup winners a Champions League spot, and he was saying, this season, what if Reading won it? Then we'd have the 15th best team in the Championship in the Champions League. I was like, yeah, I love that.
Yeah, well up for that.
But we'd have no less chance of some of the other teams that make a Champions League of winning it, let's face it.
Very much so.
You have champions of Cyprus in the Champions League or something.
Very, very quickly, while we're talking about FA Cup reforms, we had a little bit of a debate amongst our Telesend editors about this. Westie, would you be in favour of scrapping replays?
No. I know I had this debate with my dad actually in the pub. We was talking about it on Saturday. That I think it'd be unfair. It'd be another thing that's just pandering to the big clubs. Because, let's face it, if Shrewsbury get a draw against Man United tonight, that'll be an absolute bumper pay packet for them. That'll probably pay for their whole season. Okay, so to scrap replays, again, it's just pandering to the big clubs. They've got big enough squads to cope with it. If they don't like it, tough luck.
Yeah, 100% agreed.
Yeah, can't say anything else. Yeah, absolutely. And if they really don't like it, just withdraw from the competition. No one's forcing you to enter.
Or do what Man City do, put out a youth team and get knocked out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the rest of us will all go and enjoy our fun days out. And people can say, oh, well, it wouldn't be the same. I don't care.
No.
I don't care if Reading get and win the FA Cup beating League One sides all the way. They've won the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Who cares? Yeah. You only got to beat what's in front of you.
Exactly. So anyway, glad we would agreed on something.
Well, finally.
There you go. It's only taken the best part of an hour. Right, that just about wraps up the show. Just a couple of things though before I go, a couple of things I would really like to point out on the Tile List. And if you did miss it, our State of Reading FC series went up last week for very in-depth articles covering the club's transfer strategy, the academy, the identity and the atmosphere at the club, done by one Mr. Hoops, who sat to my left here.
Yes.
So four pieces that a lot of work did go into them. So if you have got the time to read them, and I wouldn't just be saying this just because it's on the task end, that, you know, a lot of work has gone into them. They're very well thought out and researched. So go give those a read. You can find the links on the front page. Once again, big, big thank you to everyone who has helped us with the crowdfunding campaign. And most of all, thank you very much for downloading and listening to the show. And so my two valued co-hosts today. Thank you for joining me.
We're doing Prediction League.
Oh, yes, of course. Just trying to get away from that one. See, this is why you're here, Westy, because you help unprofessional joke of a host like me. Right, Prediction League. Charles has already predicted a 2-0 Reading win against Rotherham on the Podcast Extra. What are you going for?
1-0.
To Reading?
Yep.
Johnny has also gone for 2-0. I've got it in text form. Haven't got handbags, his prediction yet.
Okay.
I'm going to go for a 3-0 Reading win.
Oh.
Would you like to do your Charlton one now?
Yes, I'll do it now. I'm going to say it will be 2-1 to Reading.
2-1. And I am going to go for a 1-1. Going to go slightly negative because we can't all be positive on this one.
Nope.
I will get Dave's predictions as well. Steve, do you want to give a couple of predictions for the record?
Yeah. I'll go 3-0 against Rotherham and 2-0 against Charlton. Two clean sheets.
Five
I'll take
goals.
That.
Five
yeah.
goals in two games.
All open play. That's how bold I am.
Oh, this is random predictions.
Excellent. Right, well. Anyway, that does wrap up the show. I said thank you very much once again to everyone who's got in touch and I said recommend. Twitter us into at the Tile Send using hashtag TTE Podcast. If you want to get involved with the show, I'll hopefully be back on Friday talking to you, Charles Watts, on the Podcast Extra. But as you well know from recent weeks, wacky things tend to happen on Fridays. So can't guarantee it, but do keep an eye on this feed. If you subscribe on iTunes, you'll get it straight to your phone anyway. So go ahead and do that. In the meantime, I said thanks very much, gents. See you next week for the main edition of the show. And in the meantime, come on, you ours. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tilehurst End
and facebook.com/thetilehurstend.